guys, and welcome to episode 182 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, on this episode, I got back on Dr. Stephen Phillipson. Stephen is a licensed clinical psychologist based in New York, and if you've been a long-time listener of the show, you've probably come across many of his episodes that I've done with him. In this episode, we go into another specific topic, which is great because we're trying to do more of those on the podcast. So in this episode, we talk about two-tail spikes. Now, this one is quite hard to explain. Dr. Stephen Phillipson does a good job of obviously explaining it. A two-tail spike is when you feel, to use the expression, damned if you do, damned if you don't, or stuck between a rock and a hard place is another expression. When OCD feels like it's trapped, whichever choice you try to make, it feels like it's the wrong choice. So, and OCD can do that sometimes for some people. So Dr. Stephen Phillipson wanted to address that and talk about it and go into detail. What is the two-tail spike? He gives several examples to bring it to life across different themes of OCD. Talks about a solution to it, how making choices can help, learning to not find the answer, how perfection can play into this and affect it, acceptance, the uncertainty, and much, much more. This is a wonderfully interesting topic. It's something I was aware of, but not something I could ever put into words. So if this affects you, I hope you find this useful. But as always, thank you for listening to the podcast. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Dr. Stephen Phillipson.
Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Stu, it's great to see you as always. You're looking well.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great weather here at the minute.
I heard that Europe is having a heat wave, so I'm glad you're not being affected by that.
Oh, no. Well, we've got the heat, but not as bad as like the south of France. It's ridiculously hot at the minute.
Right. And I also, you know, I'm aware that most of Europe does not have air conditioning, or as you guys say, Aircon,
yeah.
So hopefully this summer we'll teach you guys a lesson and you guys will discover the wonders of air conditioning.
Oh, yeah. The 2 weeks of heat we get are unbearable.
as long as it's only 2 weeks.
Usually about that. Cool. All right. So you mentioned to me in a message about something called two-tail spikes. And you obviously explained it and it was interesting. So we wanted to cover it in an episode. So what is a two-tail spike?
A two-tail spike is a subset of OCD where basically the brain offers a question as to which choice represents the therapeutic choice or which choice represents the ritual or the not ritual. I think a classic example of that is occurs for people who have neutral obsessions or somatic obsessions, blinking, swallowing, breathing. And with these obsessions, if you're in treatment, and I obviously within these somatic subset of OCD, the idea is that the awareness of the blinking, the awareness of the swallowing, the awareness of the breathing, in and of itself becomes the spike. The idea being, I shouldn't be aware of my own blinking. I shouldn't be aware of when I swallow. I shouldn't be aware of when I breathe. And the idea that the brain creates a consciousness, a hyper awareness of these naturally occurring phenomena becomes sort of in and of itself distressing. And so if you think about the construct of, you know, I shouldn't be aware of my blinking, my brain shouldn't make, you know, prompt me every time I blink. And whenever I talk about these things, obviously, I'm now becoming overly aware of your blinking, Stu, and I'm now becoming aware of my own blinking. So within this spike, if you hear the way people speak about it who are afflicted with this condition, there's a bit of this rule-bound thinking, the idea that people shouldn't be aware. There was almost like there's this rule about what's okay for us to be aware of and what's not okay for us to be aware of. So within that, if a person's in treatment, you think, okay, so what do I do with the awareness to blink? So if I want to get over my awareness of these phenomena, and right now I'm aware of not my non-blinking, right? So my brain says, aha, You haven't blinked in a little while, Steve. So if I blink now, am I giving in? And if I don't blink, am I avoiding? And so with two-tail spikes, as you said just a moment ago, damned if I do, damned if I don't. Yeah. And so the brain creates a phenomena where giving in to the choice, like I just became aware that I still haven't blinked. So I'm going to now blink. And my brain says, aha, you just gave in to the awareness. So, you just ritualized. How can you get better if you just ritualized? So the idea is that the choice to give in or not, you know, it sort of curses you no matter what side of the fence that you choose. And the antidote is basically where I would encourage a patient to embrace the idea, okay, I'm choosing to do it now, and that's the wrong choice. So where a person has this unanswerable phenomena, I encourage patients to just accept that whatever they choose in the moment, that's the wrong choice, and accept and make acceptance of that awareness that you've just done the wrong thing. And the reason that I encourage a patient to land on the side of it was the wrong choice is because I want to get patients away from the goal of trying to get things right, which is also, you know, also a very common phenomena with patients who have these types of spike themes. So there tends to be with persons with this type of two-tail spike, there tends to be a lot of perfectionism, a lot of overly attachment to kind of getting things right and doing things correctly. So another example is a patient might have a thought, I need to go through that door with my right foot first. And so that's the lucky foot, that's the right foot. And so a patient will, you know, if they're giving into their condition, they'll go through all thresholds right foot first. Now they go into therapy and the therapist says, aha, I have a PhD, I know what to do. Go through the door with your left foot first. There's the exposure therapy, right? We do the opposite of what the ritualized brain is commanding. So the patient is very compliant and the patient goes through the door with the left foot. Aha, bad things will happen. So the patient does it a few times and the brain's just like, okay, now the rule is go through the door with the left foot. So the person with the PhD says, great. Now the exposure therapy is go through the door with your right foot and take the risk that something bad will happen. So the patient goes through the door with their left foot. They're now in compliance with the treatment. And then the brain's like, oh, look, you're giving in. So now we have a real quandary. Which foot do we tell the patient to go through? Because now we don't know which is the therapy foot and which is the ritual foot. And so, you know, what do? Do you chase the tail for eternity? And so once again, the solution is whichever foot you go through, well, that's the wrong choice. So rather than developing a paradigm or a rule set about treatment where there's the correct foot or the incorrect foot or the ritualized foot or the non-ritualized foot, you have to make acceptance to the sort of the randomness of it so that whatever choice you make in any moment, once again, that becomes the wrong choice as to which is the ritual foot and which is the therapy foot. Oftentimes, patients with these two-tail spikes turn the therapy itself into the spike or into the question that demands an answer. I had a patient once who had HOCD or fears about being gay. And his brain, at first he did very, very well with the ERP, but toward the end of treatment, his brain tried to optimize his therapeutic response. You know, if I say, okay, brain, maybe I'm gay, is that a therapeutic response or am I now saying it to get relief? In other words, if I say the therapeutic response and I feel less anxious, Isn't that called doing a ritual? And so this person who also had perfectionism became very, very now embroiled in this endless search for what is the optimized, what is the best therapeutic response. And he realized that his OCD wasn't any longer whether he was gay or not. His OCD became, am I doing the therapy or not? And what was interesting with this person is he became so flustered in looking for the therapeutic response that he basically chose to say to any thought associated with homosexuality or even any thought associated with whether he's doing the therapy right, he used this made-up word, ishkaditi, which absolutely means nothing other than it being a made-up word. And so ishkaditi represented a philosophy that basically said, this question is so irrelevant to me that I'm going to basically respond to it with the greatest degree of irrelevance that I can muster up, which is a made-up, meaningless word. Mm. So once again, it kind of conveys the idea that there are no answers at this point, that I'm not going to spend energy and effort seeking the correct path. Another example of a two-tailed spike is a patient I had who was in his dorm room in college, and next door, his dorm mates were making a lot of noise, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. So we had the thought, okay, go knock on their door and tell them to quiet down a bit. But then his brain said to him, well, you may be being overly sensitive to the noise. Other people would just kind of embrace the noise and, you know, go to bed and just accept that this is part of what you deal with in college. So his brain basically said, would knocking on the door be me being assertive and standing up for my rights for a little less, for a little more quietness? Or would knocking on the door be me giving in and being noise fragile? Hmm. So what do you say, Sue? Should he have knocked on the door or should he have lumped the noise, made room for the noise and stayed in his room? What do you think the answer is?
Well, I would have said follow his values, but probably...
But which one are his values? To make room for noise and be the guy who's, you know, not so noise fragile? Or are his values to be assertive, stand up for himself and knock on the door? Which are his values?
Well, I don't know which his are, but I would say stand up for yourself and knock on that door.
Yes, but it may be that you're being noise fragile.
Yeah.
So the point that I'm trying to make is, once again, there's really no answer here.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not
you
sure.
You lose either way, right?
Pardon me?
You kind of lose either way.
Exactly. You know, when I was in university at 11 o'clock at night, there was always noise.
Yeah.
And the question becomes, you know, what noise level becomes the inappropriate noise level versus just standard 11 p.m. college dorm noise level? Did you go away to university?
I did, yeah.
And was there noise at 11 o'clock at night?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
All the time. So if you knock at the door, you're going to be looked at as this, you know, geek who can't handle noise, and they're going to tell you to go move off campus because this is the way dorms are. Mm-hmm. So once again, I just want to reiterate the point that there's really no answer here. And so whatever he might choose to do, he has to accept that that's the wrong choice and make room for the idea that I'm just making a choice but not spending time and effort trying to get to the root of what's the correct thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm finding this particularly hard to get my head round. Like, I get it because my brain has done this and does still do this occasionally. So I kind of internally get it, but intellectually I'm struggling here. So in that case, yeah, it's kind of, he was between a rock and a hard place, or damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. But he has to pick one of those choices, right? So, in the end, it's picking it, but not giving it the time, just almost picking it straight away, or living with the uncertainty or the acceptance of whatever happens.
Well, it's sort of all of those under the umbrella, because. Mm. If he chooses to knock on the door, he still has to accept the uncertainty that he might have been noise fragile, he might have given into a ritual. Or if he doesn't knock on the door, he has to live with the uncertainty that he might have been exceedingly passive, that he's you know, betraying his values. He's betraying his right for peace and quiet at 11 o'clock at night. Mm. So every choice that you make involves the acceptance of the unknown, involves the risk that you've done the wrong thing or that you're sacrificing something very valuable.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, part of this management of the two-tail spike basically goes along with all facets of managing OCD, which is the idea of, you know, not finding the answer. I tell patients that I live in an answer-free universe, and I encourage them to live in an answer-free universe. Now, this is a huge philosophical debate that I have with my staff, I have with my patients and family and friends. You know, are there answers in the universe? I currently live with the idea that there are no answers, and that we just have in the moment experiences, in the moment understandings, but these things are very, very subject to modification, change, and circumstances giving us different perspectives at different times.
Yeah, no, I like that. Okay, so let's put a scenario here. Someone is, and this idea of two-tail spikes, I've for the messages I've had over the years and in my own experience, I've seen it come up. So it doesn't surprise me that OCD finds a way to trap you eventually where you can't win. Obviously, there is always a way to win, but not in its game. What's my question here?
Can I just mention one kind of fun idea? One of the two-tail spikes that one of my patients in particular, who I call the king of the two-tail, because his entire OCD is about these two-tail spikes. So recently he's developed what I refer to as the tomorrow two-tail spike, meaning he'll say, hey, when I'm on a date with this new girl, should I show her how irreverent I am? Should I make crude jokes? Because his very nature, as you said, his life path is to be kind of crude and to be, you know, kind of irreverent. You know, that's his sort of comedy. That's his nature. But his question becomes, you know, should I show her how crude I am or how irreverent I am on the first date so she can get to know me right away? Or should I wait until she gets more familiar with me? So once again, you hear that should part, you know, what's the answer? What's the right thing to do? Which of these choices best represents my life path or my greatest authenticity? And if he's crude on the first date, he may be kind of blowing it. He may be mistiming it. But if he's not crude on the first date, he may be avoiding unpacking his natural being. So the tomorrow two tails, this idea of, once again, this answer seeking for what should I do at some point in the future, as opposed to the somatic two tail of, okay, I feel like blinking, but if I blink now, I give in. And if I don't blink, I'm avoiding. What should I do now?
Okay.
Yeah. So you said that you had possibly a scenario.
Yeah, but it wasn't. So, yeah, you kind of saved me there because I was drawing a blank. But it was
That's
more.
That's what I did, Stu.
Yeah, let's say, you know, someone listened to this. Next time, their brain goes into this two-tail spike. This damned if I do, damned if I don't. Oh, now I've kind of waited. Now it's weird if I do this thing, as you said. What do they do?
Make a choice. So the idea is as quickly as possible, because hanging on the fence of trying to find the answer is ritualizing. It's empowering the brain's hyper-awareness. It's empowering the brain's emotional distress signal by looking for the key to unlock the distress. So always sort of the shorter the gap between the spike and the choice, the management choice, the better, right? Mm-hmm. So if a person has ROCD and they're looking at their partner and their partner has, you know, big bushy eyebrows, and they're like, oh, should I find a woman with more manicured eyebrows than the one that I'm dating at the moment? You know, the answer is make a choice. Now, in that regard, it's not necessarily a two-tail spike, because, you know, ending a relationship because of bushy eyebrows, in my opinion, as a marital therapist, is a bit easily identified as being dysfunctional. But what's interesting is some people with ROCD will have a thought that their partner may not be intelligent enough, or their partner may not have a good enough sense of humor. Now, those are the tougher ones, because once again, where's the line? Where's the objective criteria? Or a person might have the thought, maybe I'm not attracted to my partner enough, right? And so once again, how do you know how much attractiveness, how do you know how much intelligence, how do you know how much sense of humor is the criteria? And so you don't have an answer, so you make a choice, and you know you minimize the fence sitting, because fence sitting is ritualizing, and as we know, ritualizing engages and empowers the brain's tendency to kind of react as if the spiking needs to happen. So the more ritualizing, the more the brain will prompt with the spikes.
Yeah. No, that does make sense, and I get the, not fence sitting and just kind of making a choice. Mm-hmm. One thing maybe we need to unpack more is in the case of, say, relationship OCD of, you know, my wife's got funny eyebrows, for example. she just looked
hope
up.
You're just making that up, Sue. Hope you're just making that.
Yeah, I am making that up. All right. that's never been a worry of mine. But let's say it was, and suddenly, oh, okay, I need to stop ruminating on this. Let me make a choice. I could easily, in the case of anxiety, just think I need to end this. And which yeah. I've done that before years ago, where I freaked out and was like. So yeah, to me that becomes just a little bit more complex, as in, if that makes sense, against the two-tail spike.
Right. Well, I think in that regard, though, the bushy eyebrow thing is a bit easier to understand that there's a clear ritual. Mm-hmm. The one-tail spike is, my brain tells me there's AIDS on the doorknob. My brain tells me to wash my hands. So okay, washing hands is clearly the undoing of the spike of AIDS on the doorknob. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a two-tail, there's a lot less clarity between which is the ritual and which is the natural life path.
Makes sense, yeah. Yeah, so the RSD example would just be a one-tail spike.
Generally speaking, yeah.
In which case, ERP.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So you would in that regard, you know, take a close up picture of your partner's eyebrow, you know, all gnarly and you know, it looks like a caterpillar, you know, stopped across their face, and just kind of embrace that, you know, you're being really self-denying by sticking with someone who has got gnarly eyebrows.
Yeah. Okay, great. Cool. Right, next question is, I've answered most of those. So a general one, which is words of hope for someone who's experiencing these two-tail spikes.
Yeah, I mean, if a person is compliant with the treatment guidelines, I'm happy to say words of hope for anyone with OCD, that it's a very, very powerful treatment. And you can show the brain that these themes are irrelevant, meaningless, and that you're not going to be engaged in the distractions and the ritualizing. And so, there's definitely a good prognosis with persons with two-tail spikes. They can become somewhat complicated, and treatment can become somewhat prolonged for persons with two-tail spikes, because there tends to be this marriage with perfectionism, with this idea that a person might have an attachment to the answer. But often the attachment to finding the answer is perpetuated, enriched by, you know, the brain malfunction of anxiety or a sense of incompleteness. And so developing that resilience, the willingness to kind of go through the day carrying with you the acceptance of that signal and the acceptance of in these domains, I'm not at all going to find answers can very much perpetuate and enhance the treatment outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see, as you said, like perfectionism, I can completely see how that fits in with two-tail spikes now, of the wanting to get the perfect choice, the right answer, and there are no answers, as you said.
Not in my world. Many, many people live in a universe where they have tremendous faith in answers.
Yeah, true.
I'm very happy to celebrate a life where there are absolutely no answers.
Okay, cool. And then, is there anything else on two-tail spikes you want to say?
I don't think so. It just is sort of a funny phenomena that can complicate OCD. You know, we think of OCD as, okay, here's the intrusive thought, here's the tempted ritual, and the ERP says, don't do the ritual. Mm-hmm. And so there are aspects of OCD, like the two-tail spike, that can kind of complicate, you know, a weekend warrior, you know, someone who took a weekend course on treating OCD and kind of get a bit flummoxed with these types of nuances, you know, going back to the cat chasing its tail of, oh, if your brain says left foot first, that means we now do the right foot. You know, that some facets of OCD can get a little bit complicated, and therefore treatment is sort of not for the amateurs.
Hmm. Yeah, good point. Okay, so last question then is, I've asked you this several times, is you've got a billboard in New York.
A what?
A billboard.
A billboard?
Yeah.
I have a, what do you mean a billboard?
You know, like an advertising billboard.
Okay, I have a billboard, and it says what?
I wasn't sure you're pulling my leg then.
I wasn't understanding my not understanding English. I was going to say your accent, but I'm the one with the accent.
Yeah, true. So you've got this billboard in New York somewhere, wherever you want it. What do you want written on it?
I'm glad you're not asking me for the secret of a happy life. What do I want written on the billboard? Let's see. I would probably have it say, try to make mindful choices that coincide with your values.
Hmm. Yeah, good point.
And you know, for me, the word choice is very, very meaningful and powerful.
Yeah, people go check out your long article, which is a good read.
You had to throw that word long in there.
Yeah, it's effectively a small book. but it's a good article.
Or audio book.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, of course. Well, look, thank you for talking about two-tail spike. It's definitely, I'd never heard of it, but as soon as you wrote it out, I could fully relate to it. So hopefully this will help many people.
It happens, I would say, in about, maybe one out of eight subsets of OCD, the two-tail spike can come up.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Well, it's good talking to you today.
So there you have it. Thanks to Dr. Stephen Phillipson, as always, for his time and help. Thank you to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And all the links and show notes will be at theocdstories.com. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.